In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Welcome back to the Lunch and Recycling Podcast. Here with Benji, as always, he's even got the Adria Mobile or Adria jersey behind him. This is the Alps and Phoenix 2022 preview, the only Pro Conti team that we'll be doing a preview for, but they were so good in 2021 that we thought we may as well give them one and possibly will be a World Tour team in 2023. But before we get into the recap of their season, some transfers, some MVDP injury news as well, mention this show is brought to you by our show partner Lacole. Now, if you want to get a 20% discount off Lacole kit, you can use our code, all caps, LRCP2022. That's LRCP2022 to get 20% off any and all Lacole kit at checkout. They even have a new pro indoor collection they have just released if you're indoor training or stuck inside training during the Northern Hemisphere winter. Alps and Phoenix, Benji, 33 wins, 14 World Tour wins, a stage in each of the three Grand Tours, including two Tour de France stages, and it should have been more. It's hard to imagine a better season for a Pro Conti team or any, even a most World Tour teams.
Yeah, it's pretty insane, and it doesn't come from like one rider only. It's not that Van der Poel is getting all the victories for this team. They've got multiple aspects that are taking in the victories here. Van der Poel's a big one, of course, with that spectacular Tirreno win and on stage 5, Castelfidardo. Then stage 3, he also had a victory there. He won Strade Bianche, won a stage in the UAE Tour. He won a stage in the Tour de France and took the yellow jersey there. Obviously, a very good season from him. Tour de Suisse as well, 2 stage wins. But Melier and Philipsen exist as well. And not only them, next to them, they've also got victories from riders that I perhaps wasn't expecting it, like a Walsleben taking away a stage here or there. And actually, 2 stage wins by Walsleben. So the guy had a season that I was not expecting personally. Modolo taking a win in the Tour de Luxembourg, for example. Meurice winning an Italian Classic. It comes from everywhere, kind of.
And yeah, Walsleben promptly retired after he won his first 2 pro road races. I think he'd been a cyclocrosser before. And I remember actually that with Arctic Race of Norway stage, he won ahead of Terpstra. Quite a funny stage. Anyway, Alps and Phoenix, as Benji said, in terms of World Tour victories, though, it is a lot on the three. It's all on the three. Philipsen, Melier, and Van der Poel. Yep. And you got to remember they were also pulled out of UAE after stage 1 because of a positive COVID case as well. Maybe they would have had more stages there. But the question for this team, Benji, going forward is, and now we'll get to the transfers, is do they need to start adding some more elements apart from just Benelux guys who are good in sprints and cobbled classics type races if they want to take the step up to World Tour? If they want to do that, then, you know, they'll have to have a deeper team to send to the likes of Catalunya, et cetera. But out after 2021 is Modolo. He's gone to Bardiani for a year. I think he was thinking of retiring. Petr Vaklodz did retire young. It's a shame after his crash. Before his crash, absolutely elite puncher. Yeah, Roy Jans has retired. Lawrence de Vries, I'm not sure where he's gone. Walsleben's retired, as I said. Alex Richardson and Marcel Miesen appear to be without teams. They didn't get extended. And Otto Vergeerde, who got disqualified from RVV, has gone to Trek Segafredo because he's Jasper Stuyven's friend. And the big ones, Benji, are the, well, not maybe not big ones. Let's settle down. Ben Tullett's the big one. He's gone to Ineos Grenadiers. Is that just a money thing?
I think it's both a money thing and an opportunity, I think, for Ben Tullett. Like, yes, riding at Alpecin for this time is great. I do think that when he goes to the Hill Classics, that if Van der Poel is there, he's going to get the leadership. But I also think that he had an opportunity to go for himself in Alpecin. And I think that will be less in the team that he goes to in Ineos with Pidcock being in that squad. But I still believe that it's a good decision for him. I do think that money is playing a part in that.
Louis Vavaika has gone to Quickstep Arthur Vinyl team. Belgians think he'll be the rebirth of Wout Poels and Mikel Nieve domestique in 2015 for Remco Evenepoel. That remains to be seen. Incoming transfers, a little bit like they're just doubling down on sort of some Conti sprinters who they probably think they can get to improve even more. Benji, and the classic one there is Jakub Marečko, who a highway overpass is too much for him to get over. What? Why have they signed Marečko?
Well, the only thing I see in value in Marečko is winning Asian sprint stages, as he's won like 30 right now, 18 stages in the Tour of Taihu Lake, 7 in Tour of Hainan, 3 in Qinghai Lake, 3 in Langkawi, 2 in the Tour of Turkey. It's like they want to get a sprinter under Merlier and Philipsen to ride the sprint stage that Merlier and Philipsen can't do anymore because they're stronger now. And for example, if we think about the Tour of Turkey, for example, it's not World Tour anymore, which means that they can send a smaller sprinter to that. And I think Marečko fits in that role right now. While Philipsen and Merlier will be focusing mainly on World Tour races and those .pro victories as well in one-day races in Belgium and so forth. Is that a guess that is correct in your eyes, or where do you see Marečko going?
100%. Now that you said that, it makes a lot of sense that Antalya, Tour of Turkey, Merlier and Philipsen is probably a little bit beneath them now to be going to those races, or at least those guys need to be focusing on World Tour wins and peaking for those, and Marečko fits perfectly there. Guillaume van Kersbulk has come from Alpecin Phoenix dev team, but he's like 32, won't do anything. Goggle from Quebec and NextHash, so a couple of riders who from teams that have folded, being Goggle and Marečko. Goggle is the Strada Bianca guy who there was like there'd be a group of MVDP and Wout and co, and he was in there. I think they 6th in Strada this year, last year, Benji, 8th in Amstel.
Yeah.
I think it just adds a bit more to their punch because they're not that stacked or don't have that much many options in Amstel and stuff, particularly without MVDP.
Yeah, certainly. I think that in Strade, it was pretty great to see that we had a group of Vanderpool, Alaphilippe, Bernal, Van Aert, Pidcock, Pogacar, and Michael Goggle. I remember seeing the tweets that were joking about that aspect, but the guy has had some overperformances across the years, and I think that was certainly one of them. The thing I don't see is consistency in his results. If he can get that top 10 position in Hill Classics going as a consistent thing, then he's very valuable for a team like this. If he can't get that, that's less valuable, but I think he's still worthy of having as a domestique on basically hilly terrains. And perhaps he could also try and go for a stage win in a Grand Tour in the breakaway at a certain point. I don't know. There's no Montalcino stage this year in the Giro, but any hill stage like that, I would still look to have him in the breakaway.
Yeah, I think he's a decent signing. Other signings, Gaze, Kiwi from Alpecin Phoenix, who had been on Quickstep in 2019 as a trainee, then went to Alpecin, then went to their dev team, now back up to their main team. He's 26, sort of TT guy. I think he'll just be a domestique, frankly. Sjoerd Bax from his Dutch rider from a Conti team. He has some GC results in like 2-2 races, like Tour de la Mirabelle, Alpes, Isère Tour, but I think he's just a... don't see it at World Tour or even .pro level, but they're trying to fill out he's more of a climber. Maurice Ballastet, Benji, he's from Jumbo Visma dev team. And let's take a moment here. He's quite talented, good German, good TT, 8th at Egmont Cycling Classic, young. Finn Fisher Black, Ballastet gone. Why do you think, I don't know, is it just that Jumbo didn't want him? Or do you think there's a pattern maybe that Jumbo dev team, they do have some of their top guys leaving?
I think it's a combination of both. I think Fisher Black is more of a top guy leaving than Ballerstedt personally. I think that they have the benefit of having so much talent in that dev team, Jumbo, that sometimes they can say no to talent. And perhaps that's what happened in this situation. I noticed that this rider is relatively good at time trial, but he's not the top of the crop when it comes to it. He's decent at under 23 races where he wins in versatile hilly sprints, kind of, where he's got a stage in Etup in the Tour du Pays de Montbéliard, where he got away last minute on a hill stage and time trial to the finish line, so that time trial came in. But he's also got top 10 sprints some at places. And in a Conti sprint, second behind Patrick Stosch of Voster, that's a pretty decent Conti sprinter that he just came second after. So he's a bit versatile in that area. But when we look at riders that are also in Jumbo dev team, we've got the Van Dijk brothers, we've got Hesman. Those are riders that I would put a level higher than Ballerstedt personally. And perhaps the decision was made there where this man, Ballerstedt, was like, I'm 21. I want to go to another team. I don't want to stay in a dev team for this year. So I'm going to make the decision to go to Alpecin Phoenix and not stay another year, perhaps at Jumbo dev team before they try and pick me up at the end of that year.
Fabio van den Bosche is a Belgian 21-year-old. They've also signed 12th on GC at Tour de Bologna, 15th GC at Baloise Belgium Tour. He was on Sport Flandre and Baloise. He just looks like a bit of a development, a classic sort of Alpecin rider for those sort of races that they've signed. And the last couple, Benji, are transfers from World Tour teams. The only two transfers from World Tour teams, if you're not counting Gogol from the defunct Quebec and Extash. Aldani first, Benji, the Italian from Lotto Soudal, who's shown some flashes of really good level and fourth in his Giro stage this year at 24 and a couple of other top 10s, are just consistent top 10s in sprints this year, as well as second in Vuelta a Castilla y León. I was really surprised to see Lotto let him go, particularly as a potential high point scorer this year.
I agree, but I think that it could also be that his contract at Lotto was running out and that Aldani thought to himself, well, I've got a team, Lotto, that is going downhill at the moment when it comes to their performances across the years. I've got an opportunity, Alpecin Phoenix, of a team that is moving up when it comes to their performances across the years and has a brighter future ahead of them based on what we can see now. I do think that it might have been a decision of Aldani instead of Lotto to leave that team and go to Alpecin Phoenix, because I do believe that he's a pretty strong rider and that he's good on many different terrains. He's got low-key versatile hilly results. He's got decent sprint on the flat as well. He can low-key follow on cobbles, although it hasn't really come out recently this year. So all that combined, I believe that he's a very valuable asset to Alpecin Phoenix personally.
The last one who I actually think is the most talented of the lot is Rob Stannard, the 23-year-old coming from Mitchelton Scott, or Bike Exchange rather. 23 now, still young, and he has been on Michelin Scott. He was there for a good, 4 years. Started there very young. Sixth at Brabants in 2021, when he did get his own opportunity to ride for himself. He had really good Italian classics results at under 23s or juniors. He came second in 2020 at Giro della Toscana. But a lot of the time he has ridden, and this is why the results don't show it, in support of Michael Matthews, particularly at the Vuelta. But when he gets his own chance, he gets decent results, like the Chiusdino stage and Tirreno stage two. He came sixth there, a really good result. He would have won, obviously, the Andalusia stage. Well, obviously, I think he would have won the stage five sprint, his first pro win, Andalusia, but Impey chopped him. We all know the story there. And then Benji and I were the least surprised people on the planet that he left Bike Exchange after that. I think he's going to kick off at Alpecin, Benji.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think it's an opportunity for him to really get through the barrier there. But what races do you think he will get a lead at this team? And will that depend on the races that he goes to? Because in all honesty, when it comes to Rob Stannard, I don't immediately see him leading a team at a certain type of race.
Well, I think he's going to get a lot of leadership at Hilly Italian Classics, where they're very weak. And even at like Liège-style races and other just hilly one-day races or Spanish hilly races. I don't know if they do GP in the rain or something like that. But the reason I think he might have a better, more leadership and more responsibility, Benji, which I want to talk about right now, is Mathieu van der Poel's injury. It's come out that he had a bit of a knee issue and then that got fixed. But then the team's come out and there's been conflicting reports. But then the Rudolphs came out and then his father was saying what was happening, that apparently he's going to be out of racing action for months. He's not doing CX World Championships and stopped riding CX on the 5th of January because he has chronic pain in his back. The Rudolph brothers said he doesn't have chronic back pain. He just has continual back problems where he has pain in his back quite a lot, which is the definition of chronic back pain. So apparently that needs to be fixed. And to quote his team doctor, just to make sure, Guy de Schutter said in an interview, one of the discs in his back didn't fully function as a shock absorber, resulting in less movement in his lower back. It looks like he will be missing at least the first few months of racing. I think, Benji, they have to be so overly cautious here. They are good points-wise. They have Philipsen in the middle of the year. If they want to go World Tour next year, it's open to them. if they do go world tour, they need a healthy Van der Poel for that next 3-year cycle and for their sponsors. And I don't think they should rush him back. Not exactly a controversial opinion, right?
Yeah, I believe that. I agree with you. They've also been quite clear about that they're not trying to rush him back. I think Mathieu Van der Poel himself said quite recently when he returned to CX and then he left CX again because the injury was kind of back. And then we heard that he was saying, okay, I'm not going to rush myself back. I'm going to make sure everything's all right before I get back to racing. And the question is then, well, when is he going to come back? We're talking about not being there for the CX Worlds, but what does this mean for the season that is coming? And we've already had a bit of reporting where it looks like he might not even be back for the initial classics of the season. And the question there is then, is that going to hurt the team? Who is going to take leadership then if Mathieu Van der Poel is not there? All these questions, but it's definitely sure that it's a lingering back pain that needs to be fixed in the long term and doesn't need to be bandaged up to do the cobble races in a quick matter, I think.
Exactly. They're pretty deep there with Philipsen and Merlier. Particularly Philipsen, I think, can take over a leadership role in some of them. And I think I'm understanding this correctly, Benji. This back issue is unrelated to the famous crash he had in the Olympics mountain bike, where he landed heavily on his back. Apparently, this was a lingering issue before then, according to the Rudolphs, and it's not technically related to that heavy fall. So I think my concern is, I know he's only 27, Mathieu Van der Poel, but he's been riding very seriously for a long time. Do you think, with the likes of Pidcock, Van Aert, and Mathieu Van der Poel, Benji, CX seems to give them almost a bit of an advantage in terms of how, I don't know how good they are, maybe it's unrelated, but is he doing too much? Is Van der Poel doing too much? Doing mountain bike one day, CX one day, or do you think it's just unrelated and he just has a back problem?
Well, quite certainly I think that doing an entire season of racing for 5 years in a row is going to perhaps overload a rider and might make him peak earlier in his career and so forth, but that's something that hasn't been properly proven yet. How many riders in the history have done CX mountain bike and road race throughout the entire year? And do we have a proper report of that 5 years later, they were not at their best level anymore as a consequence? We don't have that much data when it comes to that. So we're kind of in the moment where I think I heard Wout van Aert speak about it on a podcast most recently, where he was asked, the dad of Mathieu Van der Poel was speaking about that these riders, they are being rushed through all these disciplines an entire year, is that going to have a consequence on their career? And Van Aert basically responded with, I don't know. I guess that's something that we'll see in the future. I personally don't feel it, so he said, but it might be something that pops up at a certain point.
And particularly, I don't know how mentally draining it is for Wout van Aert to turn up and do a CX race. Is it just basically him doing an hour sort of intensity of, not training, but an hour of serious intensity, and there's just people there watching? The crash risk where you actually will hurt yourself seriously is quite low. So maybe it's not that big a deal. I don't know. But it does seem like when everybody else, all these other riders who, particularly the GC guys or classics guys, are tuning up with, proper training or road-focused training, and these guys are flying out to America, it's not going, but they're doing CX right up until the end of January. You do wonder, how does that affect the start of their classic season? But I don't think we're going to see Van der Poel at opening weekend. Remains to be seen whether we'll see him at Tour of Flanders. I certainly hope we do. He's a big element to that, and hopefully Paris-Roubaix as well. But I think Tour de France, Benji, he again will be wanting to take yellow either after the TT or one of those cobbly stages. So that's why I think they should be really cautious, because that Tour de France stage 5 cobble stage really has his name all over it, as well as Askren and Pedersen, etc. But on that note, Benji, speaking of cobble classics, who do you think will take up the mantle? Do you just slot in Philipsen for opening weekend?
Oh, I think it's a really difficult decision there. I think Johnny van Meert is certainly a rider that can't be underestimated, because he was 7th in RVV this year. So he's the rider that I would put as one of the leaders. I would not necessarily put everything on Philipsen for those races, because I believe Vermeer is a better couple of Ryder and Philipsen is. I know that's controversial when talking to you after the hype of Paris-Roubaix of Philipsen last season, but I believe Vermeersch is better. But all in all, I think Dries De Bond is a rider I can support. Ricard is a rider I can support. Dillier is a rider I can support. But I don't see other real top leaders in this team for those color races. Perhaps someone like Vermeersch to take over.
I agree. For E3, for RVV, clearly it would be Vermeersch without Mathieu van der Poel. And I think just for opening weekend, for Omloop and Koerner, so Vermeersch can be, peak it. It's very hard to win or be the best at Omloop and then be the best at Roubaix and RVV. I would have Philipsen for opening weekend and for Gent-Wevelgem, or maybe have Philipsen and Vermeersch for Gent-Wevelgem there. I do think Philipsen at Koerner, I don't see any reason why he can't win that. What about Merlier, Benji? Would you make him focus on the Giro and his incredible success in stage race sprints?
I would indeed put him in the Giro because we know that there's a lot of flat sprints in the Giro this year. But when it comes to like the start of the season in 2021, we saw that he won Le Samet, Montserrat, Brederode Kokseide, those 1.1. That's not a classification. 1.1 and 1. Pro races. That's the one he won. And then in Kuhne, he came 38th. So he was not in the front group. He was 2 minutes behind there. So that's where the trouble lies. It looks like he's not great enough at getting over the cobbles to make it to the first group in those races. So I don't know if Gent-Wevelgem is really relaxed, then he might do it. But once again, 34th in Gent-Wevelgem, it's not really the group that you need to be in if you want to sprint for it in the end. But then again, Philipsen didn't make the first group in Gent-Wevelgem either this year. In Dwarsdorf-Vlaanderen, he got third though, which is, I guess, an opportunity and shows that he can get over those hills. But then again, Dwarsdorf-Vlaanderen was not the most crazy cobble stage of the year, of course. It's a fake one.
Yeah, made up race. I think in terms of, and it's hard for us to predict squads for Alpecin because they don't have to go to every World Tour race. That's the benefit they have, that they get invited to all of them. But I know that they've turned down Catalunya apparently. So they're not going to Catalunya. I believe they're going to Paris-Nice. In terms of GC, I'm really keen, obviously biased, but Jay Vine, to see what he can do in his second year now, racing in World Tour races. I think he might be doing Paris-Nice, and we'll see what he can do on that Torini climb on stage 7, 15Ks, 7%. So he's one to watch. I think he's their best climber, but Tobias Beyer, Benji, is there. He's 22. I reckon Beyer could kick on as well.
Yeah, I think so as well. He had a good, was it Burgos stage where he got top five, I think, over the, whatever the name of that climb is again. And at Vuelta, he ended up crashing out, I think. Didn't he ride into like a branch or something at a certain point?
He did. The thing I really want to discuss, and it's still a hangover from last year, Benji, is Tour de France. And Michel Lepres didn't matter because Merlier missed the split and Philipsen didn't, and he won that race. Merlier and Philipsen at the same race and their Tour de France team. Let's assume for present purposes that MVDP will be right for July, which is 6 months, 7 months away. I think I'm hoping he will be, and I think he will be. Obviously, he has to go to the Tour. But do you send both Merlier and Philipsen, Benji, and with the different green jersey competition this year, which is more it's less pure sprint focused, and I think Philipsen climbs quite well, and Merlier definitely will not probably finish the race. Do you send both? Because Merlier is the better pure bunch sprinter.
It's a very difficult situation to look at because we've had Van Aert already say that he wants to go for the green jersey in the Tour de France. Now looking at Alpecin, they've got three options like you mentioned: Van der Poel, Philipsen, or Merlier. Merlier is not a chance for green, in my opinion. There's not that many pure flat sprint stage. I think we said 3-4, something like that, when we looked at the route preview we did. And then I think about Philipsen, I think, yeah, he can indeed do the more versatile sprint stage, but there are also not that many versatile sprint stage in the Tour de France. So then I'm thinking, okay, going in the breakaway might matter a lot. And in that situation, Van der Poel is the man that fits that role perfectly. So True. It's like, it's very difficult to say which one should go for it. It's certainly not Merlier. I personally believe that I'd like to see Vanderpool go for it because it's going to spice up the race. We would all love to see Vanderpool go into the breakaway every day to try and take green jersey points and Van Aert trying to defend it against him. That'd be amazing. But I find it hard to believe that they're going to be sprinting with Merlier, Philipsen, and Vanderpool in the same sprint, where most likely I'd see Philipsen doing a lead out for Merlier in a flat sprint. And then we'd see Vanderpool sprinting in the top 10 position when he can. And I just don't see that.
I know. It's an almost impossible answer because I'm firmly of the belief that Merlier is a faster sprinter in a pure sprint than Philipsen, particularly with the Jonas Rickard lead out. That is maybe one of the best combinations in cycling behind Mirku and Jakobsen, perhaps, in the Tour de France. But then Philipsen is the much better green jersey option. But then there's MVDP. But then will MVDP finish the race? Or will he be doing just, you know, MVDP? I've never seen him focus on a single thing for 3 weeks straight, Benji. So I don't know. It's definitely one to watch. Merlier is going to the Tour. So he definitely will go. I wouldn't then send Philipsen. I'm pretty well, according to, apparently he's going to the Tour.
Okay.
And I think that does make sense. I think first week stage wins, opening weekend stage wins are really important. I would send Merlier and I would snub Philipsen and I would send him to the Vuelta again and just make him do some other stage races or one days around the Tour de France or just after. So sorry, Jasper.
Oh, I'd feel bad after last year getting second and third in many positions. And
well, that proves my point, doesn't it?
After Champs-Élysées, he was crying on the other side of the road because it was over and he didn't get that sprint victory. Come on, don't leave him home. I'd feel bad about it.
I don't feel bad. If he'd won one of them, then maybe he'd go. But maybe we'll see as well. There's a long time until the Tour de France and maybe he's absolutely flying. He's also still a young guy. But yeah, I think last year, Merlier won the stage. Then they tried about seven times with Philipsen. Didn't happen. No, not going. Sorry. But that's pretty much their TDF squad. Obviously, Jonas Rickard and Krieger will go, and Sylvain Dillier probably, and Dries de Bont, who I was surprised didn't go last year, or Vermeers, etc. More of a classics-focused one. What are you most looking at with this team, Benji? Obviously, MVDP, we're hoping will come back, but who do you think will break out and do something that's not Merlier, Philipsen, or MVDP?
Well, we've spoken about Jayvine already last year a lot, but also you just did because you're pretty hyped about him. I am currently of the opinion that I'd rather see him go for a stage win before I see him go for GC. And that's just my take on that. Sure, he might be able to do a proper TT, but we haven't seen like full-on reports of that so far, so I wouldn't be sure about that yet. And I'm asking myself, what Grand Tour would Jayvine be sent to? And I'm saying Giro Vuelta is the one Giro Vuelta double, perhaps? Or is that too early?
He won't do Giro. I think he'll do Vuelta. I think Vuelta suits him a lot.
It's still so long. I want to see him ride more mountain stages.
No, he'll be doing a lot of stage. He'll be doing stage races, I think. But what about the Giro you mentioned, Benji? Do you think the likes of... Will we continue to see random wins from the likes of Rysabic or Wellsleben, et cetera? Or Gogol, do you expect this team to keep getting the most out of other riders?
I'm not necessarily saying that they're going to win with Rysabic. I do see an ability of winning a stage with Aldani. He can also climb next to sprinting and put that combination in a breakaway in the Giro, and he can win a stage in the Giro. I truly believe that. Now, when it comes to Gogol, similar situation. I'm just not sure he's the winning type. That's something I still need to see when it comes to Gogol before saying that he can win a stage at the Giro, for example. I am curious what Tobias Beyer will be doing. I think it's going to be a very similar thing as Jayvine when it comes to potentially going into breakaways at the moment and trying to get a stage win somewhere here and there and trying to get more consistent mountain results throughout the year. And I think that's something I look forward to in those two types. When it comes to completing a team for the Giro, it's curious because I'd be saying, obviously, a sprint train for Merlier. And next to that, riders like Aldani for breakaways, right? Gogol for a breakaway, perhaps.
Maresco.
Then I'm already like, who else? Maresco, okay. Why? For the third week, Merlier might not get there.
I reckon like Murisa in a break is good. But yeah, I think it's just train with Merlier plus Murisa and a couple of breakaway guys like Tatir or something. I don't know, maybe Tobias Bayo. Short backspin. You see how he goes on GC. See if he can go top 15.
I don't believe it, sorry.
I think it's possible. Anything's possible. Before we get on to our hot takes, a special segment for Alpecin, which is will they, won't they? Will Alpecin Phoenix go to World Tour in 2023? Now, obviously, they can walk in. We've mentioned the point system ad nauseum. They're ranked, I don't know, sixth or seventh across the three-year cycle. Or they're clearly above. They're well in the top 18. And even if they have a season from hell with no MVDP, they've still got Merlier Phillips. And they are going to be eligible to walk into the World Tour if they want to, if they have applied for 2023. But the Rudhoff brothers have been very elusive about confirming whether they have or haven't applied, which, frankly, I don't really know the tactics or strategies why. What do you think, Benji? Do you think they've applied and want to actually go into World Tour in the next three-year cycle?
Well, I'll be honest about it. I've had like seven people at this point say that it's an invisible secret that they've already applied, apparently. But I can't confirm that 100% without actually knowing it myself. So it's all external sources, but it's people that actually are in the business of journalism and cycling. So if they're lying about it, that would be pretty sad. But so if seven other people, all disconnected from each other, are saying the exact same thing, I feel like it's likely that it's the case that they are going to World Tour. Do I believe that they should? Yes, I think they should. And the reason is simple. They are currently in the first position of the Pro Conti, Pro Tour, second division in cycling, basically. That allows them those benefits of choosing the access to all the races they want to ride without getting a World Tour license. They also have like lighter rules when it comes to minimum salary and so forth, although I'm not sure they even use that to their advantage, to be honest. But I do believe that they have that spot now, but can you trust the UCI of not changing the rules when it comes to that first spot in the next three-year cycle? I don't trust the UCI in that. I would want to secure my access to the Tour de France by being in that World Tour division. Obviously, it's going to cost money, but let's be honest, Alpecin Phoenix has gotten quite a few new sponsors, including that De Koenig and so forth. With Van der Poel in your team, you're not going to have too much trouble getting sponsors, I would expect, except for the, what was it, that video they did? If they make a lot of more videos like that one, the advertisement for De Koenig. Jesus Christ. If you haven't seen that yet, you should check it out. Yeah. So basically, so I don't think they'll have trouble to pay for a World Tour license personally. And I believe that they're strong enough to definitely make the move to World Tour. And I think I think they would get a lot of criticism if they would stay to benefit from that first spot in the second division.
I think you've touched on it there, and that criticism is related to your earlier point about the UCI, is that this system cannot continue like this. And the UCI surely knows that you cannot have a team. The point of this whole system is that it creates a promotion relegation system so that the best Pro Conti team is able to move up to World Tour. And currently, Alpecin Phoenix have a better license than the World Tour teams. They pay less. I don't know. I think World Tour costs like 250,000 euro. I'm making that up maybe.
Yeah, minimum 150. I checked it the other day.
Okay. So you got to pay a fair chunk of change, which is that's a rider right there, or a decent-ish rider, or a strong Neo Pro. Pay that, and then they can turn down invites. Catalunya, Alpecin are like, you know what? Our sponsors don't really care about Catalunya. We're not going. And going to races costs money. And having a team that is capable of going to them also costs money. So this system cannot continue, and that's why I think Benji's alluded to it. I agree. There's a decent chance the UCI amend this system and maybe change it into a use it or lose it, where if you don't apply to be World Tour at the end of the cycle, well, you don't get access to this special invitation system. So, and what if MVDP is injured, Benji, and they then can't get wildcard invites in the next cycle?
Yeah, quite possible in that situation. But to be honest, they have enough riders in their team that they could probably survive without Van der Poel, to be honest. But in all honesty, another aspect to that is now there's the fact that we currently have had 19 World Tour teams, including Quebeca last year, and that's moving towards 18, which apparently, according to the current rules, makes it so that two riders will have that benefit that Alpecin now has. Two teams will have that benefit that Alpecin now has in the next year. If that is the case, then two teams have more benefits than all the World Tour teams. That can't consistently happen in the coming years. Something has to change in that aspect. And therefore, there's always a danger that the UCI changes it. And if that happens, then the first person or the first team in that ranking that is benefiting from that is going to be very sad to know that they're stuck in a three-year cycle in Pro Conti and might not have those benefits in the coming years.
So Alpecin, let's say they do go World Tour, Benji, in the next three-year cycle, like 2023, suddenly Alpecin Phoenix is a World Tour team. There's all the admin and business stuff behind it, whatever, that's fine. Nothing really changes in terms of the top race invitations. They're already going to all the monuments. They're already going to all three Grand Tours. They have the last year, and they will this year, and they will the next year. So what would you change if you were the Ruthoff brothers? If you were Alpecin, would you suddenly, Benji, be doing different signings? Or would you double down on what they've been doing, which is signing the likes of Melier and Philipsons and just honing in on those Belgian races? And then, I mean, Jay Vine is sort of a weird one because he got the contract initially through Zwift and then they extended him because he got did quite well last year. Beyer as well is a bit of a different one. Or would you suddenly be like, okay, we need to have a team for Lombardia now?
I have an issue with the signing of Maresco because of this. Because we're talking about the fact that Maresco is going to be the guy that feels like he could go to the likes of a Tour of Turkey and smaller one-day races that Philipsen and Merlier are too good for to also take UCI points. But if they go to World Tour next year, that's completely irrelevant. Like, exactly. Yes, it's still manageable or useful that that guy will go to those smaller races. But with Merlier, Philipsen, and also the likes of a Vanderpool in your team, he's going to have to get lucky to get in the top five of the riders. And I think it's the top five riders that count for the UCI points, right?
Top 10. Yeah, top 10 riders
count to UCI. Well, he's probably going to get in the top 10.
No, he will for sure. 100%. He would easily get in top 10. I agree. Like and I don't think he's that cheap, although he was on Vini and that he might not have had much negotiating leverage. It's a two-year deal. It's not like a four-year deal, but still, I agree with Benji's point. Like, it becomes less important and you need to then have a squad instead of the manpower that you're able to deny the Catalunya invite and go to a different race.
Yeah.
You have to go to Catalunya. You have to go to Basque Country. You have to go to all these races. And
Fortunato.
I wrote past the whole of Yolo Cometa today. I think Fortunato was there on the Mongo descent from Xavier to Denia. they were doing photos and stuff. I felt bad for Benji not being there at the time. But anyway, sorry, that was my little anecdote. Fortunato, no. Yeah, but exactly. Like,
come on.
There's a risk, Benji, when teams try to sign some GC riders, etc., and it's like, why not just double down on what they're good at? And I think that's what they will do. But you don't need the Mareshkos of the world in the future. But yeah, how do you think now into the hot takes, Benji? By the way, for the record, I think they're going World Tour in 2023. Is that your gut feeling, Benji?
Yeah, I believe that Alpecin is World Tour in 2023.
Okay. Hot takes time, or predictions rather. So they had 14 World Tour wins in 2020. One, they threw away a couple of the tour as well, as we all know. I'm setting the over-under at 12.5, which is pretty high given MVDP's out for the first few months, but 12.5, Benji.
I'm going to put it 12.5. I'm going to go under?
I'm going to go under.
Yeah, I'm going to go under, and I'll start off with my first hot take as well. I believe that Vanderpool will not win a single race before the Tour de France.
I agree with that,
and
yeah.
I hope I'm wrong, but I think it's because of the injury.
I think Jasper Philipsen wins two classics, World Tour classics. I think he wins...
Which ones? Oxyclean.
Kerna, Brugge de Panne, or Gent-Wevelgem. Two of those three. Yeah, easy. Easy does it. I forgot Brugger Panna was even there. I was going to say it's like a harder race than that. Like Paris-Roubaix, that's French.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I agree with that. MVDP, I think we're both a bit bearish on his first half of the year and maybe even the second half as well. What about Merlier, Benji? Do you think he'll still be a top sprinter? I think Merlier wins. They're not going to send him to the Vuelta because he doesn't care. I was about to say he's going to win a stage in each of the three Grand Tours, but he doesn't care to go to the Vuelta. Do you think they win a monument?
I don't think they will win a monument this year, and it's partially once again due to Mathieu Van Der Poel being on the bench for quite a bit, and as a consequence I'm not sure he's going to come back at full force from the kickoff, and therefore if he's back at the Tour de France, for example, in proper form, then he's going to ride at Tour de France, he's going to do pretty well at that, but then we're looking at the rest of the season and there's only Lombardia left, and unless Roubaix once again gets postponed to October.
I think Jay Vine wins five races, two World Tour races, and a Grand Tour stage. Not even a hot take.
I was going to go for one Grand Tour stage as a hot take.
Well, I mean, if he's good enough to win the Grand Tour stage, then he's good enough to take a couple of wins. So that sort of feeds into it. Yeah, five wins for Vine, minimum. And I think Jannie van Romesch wins Tour of Flanders. And I think... Do you think Merlier or Philipsen leaves? I think absolutely no way. Or do you think Philipsen maybe wants to go to the Tour somewhere?
I think they stay. If he wants to go to the Tour someday, well, would he have had the opportunity at the likes of a UAE to do that?
Exactly.
If he stayed there. And he went to Alpecin anyway. So I guess it's not a dead set goal of his to be at every Tour de France. But I do believe that he's going to be at the Tour de France. I think they're going to send all three once again, and they're just going to go for Merlier in the first week. And then when Merlier is completely milked out of energy, then they've got Philipsen left, and Van Der Poel will be toying around and hoping that he can get green jersey points. And then we'll realize that Philipsen is higher than him in the green jersey points. And as a consequence,
I reckon it's going to be a mess. He's going to be a complete mess.
Like, I wanted to say as hot take, Philipsen's going to win the green jersey, but at this point, it's the only reason that I would have said that was because I would think that Van Aert might also have a hot mess on his hands at Jumbo, in which we'll talk in the Jumbo pot about having to both be supportive for Roglic, and next to that, trying to go for the green jersey he wants, not being able to attack away on the cobble stage and so forth. So that's perhaps something that locks him behind, but I've also got the feeling that Philipsen's not perfect for the green jersey either. So at this point, I don't have a clue who's going to win that green jersey at all of the Tour de France personally. But I do want to add that Aldani's going to win a Giro stage.
All right. Aldani winning Giro with Merlier. We've set a lot of wins for them. So hopefully, I still think they'll take the under on the World Tour level wins. But yeah, I think Edward Plankert probably takes them. They'll just have like at least 1-1 or 2-1 wins from the likes of Plankert, etc., filling up the stat sheet as well. But still, really keen to see what happens with MVDP, but nonetheless a team to be excited for in 2022. We hope you enjoyed this Alpecin Phoenix preview. Thanks to our show partner Lacolle for supporting the podcast. You can check them out down below with the discount code LRCP2022 for 20% off, and we'll see you with the next preview. Big hitter teams left only. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.